Welcome to Awesome Movie Year, the podcast where we take a look back at an awesome year for movies, which is every year. My name is Josh Bell, film critic and writer, and I'm joined by my co-host.
I'm Jason Harris, filmmaker, comedian, and we are recording live from Las Vegas. Now, the best way to get to Josh's house, if you're coming from the South, is you want to go up the 15, take it to the 215. You get off at Jones. Now, I'm not telling you how to go. I'm just saying, with road construction, that's still probably the easiest way. There is, of course, you could get off any exit, just shoot up maybe Warm Springs or whatever. And when you get to Jones, you're going to make that left, but you do what you want to do.
I like that. A, you've now given people directions to find me, and B, that of all the you know, running themes of this film, that directions that Holly Hunter's character insists on giving to cab drivers is what stuck with you. So It's a nice little detail.
Well, I did stop on purpose on how to find you, because
you don't want to give out my address and unit number here on this podcast.
Not again. You've had so many clamoring fans, you know, just camping outside your condo that we couldn't do it again. So
yeah. So what are we doing here?
But Josh, for the directions, that I feel it's an important character detail. Into Holly Hunter's character, Jane, and basically how she looks at the world.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's one of those things that you might not grab onto at first watching the movie, although obviously you did. But I do think, especially as it reoccurs, the significance of it becomes clear. So we're talking about broadcast news here. This is a special bonus episode here for our season on the films of 1987. If you are listening here, you're one of our elite Patreon members. We've just finished up the 1987 season, and we thank you very much for subscribing and checking this episode out. Otherwise, it's probably a while since we finished this season, but we're
thank
coming
you
back
anyway.
To it. Yeah, we thank you anyway. We thank you more, though, if you've subscribed to Patreon.
Well, Dave
I'll
does.
Say it.
Blood-sucking Dave does. I haven't seen a dime of that, Josh.
The more subscribers we get, the more likely it is that that might happen. It'll trickle down to us. You know, in the 80s, it's trickle-down economics, Jason.
I know. I feel like Dave's got some backroom deal going on with the Nevada film critics here, and they're siphoning money to and from each other. I can't wait to expose you guys.
I don't know what your connection is there with these two organizations. But anyway, broadcast news was one of the films that came up multiple times in suggestions from listeners on social media when we asked about favorite movies from 1987 as we were getting started with this season. And it's also one of the Best Picture nominees. And last season in 1975, we ended up covering all of the Best Picture nominees with our bonus episodes. And that's not happening this year. But we did want to get into broadcast news. We thought it would be a fun one to talk about as a bonus. And so here we are. So if you're one of the people who suggested it, thank you for suggesting it. And we'll talk about it.
Good, Josh. Way to tease it. Just like a great newsman, Josh. Great tease there.
I am not, even though I was on the news this morning. So while I was asleep, it was amazing.
And your family has an illustrious news career.
Yeah. My parents both have long histories in the TV news business, but I am much like Aaron Altman, you know, in my fumbling, I guess, here.
Lots of flop sweat.
Right.
Josh.
Yeah, exactly. So,
hey, Josh, those other two movies that we're not covering are Fatal Attraction. I think we've all probably seen that one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Hope and Glory, the John Borman movie. I've never seen it. Have you?
No. And I think, as I said in our epilogue episode, I had never even heard of it. So that seems to be one that kind of has been lost to time, but might be interesting to check out. Definitely, I've seen Fatal Attraction, though.
I mean, you could have heard of it if you had listened to our episode on Josh's pick, the Lee Marvin movie from 1967, directed by John Borman, in which I mentioned that film. But that's cool, whatever.
Yeah, so. I mean, I'm sure we went through John Borman's filmography there, but I didn't recall that. And I would have remembered it more, I think, if it was something that you said that you had seen and liked. But I don't think that was the case. So,
Why would you pay attention to things on your own episode, Josh?
I don't know why I would pay attention to anything that you say.
That's how good podcasting works in a lot.
Right, exactly. We're really getting some broadcast gold here. So broadcast news, in addition to being a Best Picture nominee, was a box office success. It grossed $67.3 million on its budget of $15 million. And it was nominated for 7 Oscars, including Best Picture. It was also nominated for all 3 of its main actors, Holly Hunter for Best Actress, William Hurt for Best Actor, and Albert Brooks for Best Supporting Actor. I feel like that's a real fine parsing of who's a lead and who's a supporting actor in this film. But I'm guessing part of it was the way that these campaigns go, so that they submit in different categories, so there's a higher likelihood of people getting nominated.
Yeah, that sounds right, Josh. Michael Douglas won for Best Actor, Wall Street. I don't think anyone's going to really say no for that one. Cher, we know, won for Moonstruck. Although I think, I mean, we talked about it, the women this year, man. It was Cher, Glenn Close, Holly Hunter, Sally Kirkland, and Meryl Streep. I mean, that's a murderer's row right there. And then you got Albert Brooks losing to Sean Connery. Yeah, I don't know about that one in The Untouchables.
I still haven't seen The Untouchables, actually, so I can't say. But obviously, as we talked about in our Moonstruck episode, I love that film and I love Cher in that film. So I'm fully in favor of that win. Although Holly Hunter is fantastic here, and this was a big breakout role for her.
Yeah, I think I would have voted for Holly Hunter, but I was a child at the time and I didn't have an Oscar ballot there, Josh.
No, you weren't a member of the Academy at 7 years old?
No, maybe she could have won a Nickelodeon's Kid Choice Award and we could have slimed her back.
Yeah, we have talked about the Kids' Choice Awards multiple times. This was also nominated for Best Original Screenplay, Best Editing, and Best Cinematography. However, it did not win any of the Oscars that it was nominated for, nor did it win any of the 5 Golden Globes that it was nominated for. So it was left at the altar there at the big awards this year. But, I mean, impressive to get all those nominations still.
And James L. Brooks was the only director of a Best Picture nominee this year that did not get the Best Director nomination. So that was a little strange. Also, though, he had just won everything in the last, for terms of endearment. He won Picture, he won Director, he won Screenplay. So he's got plenty of Oscars and tons and tons and tons and tons of money.
Yes, he does. And I still haven't seen Terms of Endearment, but I'd like to check that out.
I was going to watch it last night, but I didn't. We're recording the day after Thanksgiving, and I had to still watch Thanksgiving movies last night.
Yeah, including perhaps a Holly Hunter vehicle, Home for the Holidays.
I love it. I think I've said, and she directed that one too. I think I mentioned it at least. I mentioned it recently on Dave's podcast and on ours. It's a good movie. I highly recommend that.
I don't remember you bringing that up, actually.
When we did the live show, Dave, and we were talking about Thanksgiving and other Thanksgiving movies, but
I'm joking because Josh doesn't remember you saying
that. I was going to say, you don't remember anything that I say.
Well, when you say things that are wrong, like that Holly Hunter directed Home for the Holidays, why should I even listen to you? Because Jodie Foster directed it.
Ah, that's so true. But that's right. That's true. I still recommend it. It's a great movie.
I would like to see it, actually. I mean, I feel like it comes up, you do recommend it a lot, and it comes up at Thanksgiving time often, and I've had multiple instances where I might write about some Thanksgiving-related thing and thought I should check it out, and I'll get to it eventually.
Yeah, and I knew Jodie Foster. I just said that kind of blip in my mind right there. But what's interesting, Josh, is, you know, we talk about this. There aren't that many Thanksgiving movies, and we just did Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, so I'm like, oh, I'll watch another Thanksgiving movie. So I watched The Ice Storm, and that is depressing, that movie. You should probably watch Home for the Holidays.
It's very good, though.
It is quite good, yeah.
This episode is about broadcast news, so we'll get back to that. It was also highly acclaimed by critics. Siskel and Ebert gave it 2 thumbs up and were very enthused about it. And not surprisingly, given that these are 2 guys who, of course, work in TV, they felt like they had a connection to it and talked about how authentic it was. And Roger Ebert said, "Broadcast news is as knowledgeable about the TV news gathering process as any movie ever made, but it also has insights into the more personal matter of how people use high-pressure jobs as a way of avoiding time alone with themselves. The movie is described as being about a romantic triangle, But that's only partly true. It is about three people who toy with the idea of love, but are obsessed by the idea of making television. Like Terms of Endearment, the previous film by James L. Brooks, it does not see relationships as a matter of meeting someone you like and falling in love. Brooks, almost alone among major Hollywood filmmakers, knows that some people have higher priorities than love and deeper fears.
So Siskel had it at number five on his top 10 for 87, and Ebert had it as number eight. I think the Tom character, the William Hurt character, while he is obsessed with making good TV, also would have been, of those main three, the one who'd been like, hey, I want to get married and have a normal life as well.
Well, it's not that they don't want that. I mean, as we see, I guess, you know, rushing to the end here in that epilogue that I think we both agree was a little unnecessary, both Tom and Aaron, Albert Brooks's character, do seem to be on that path towards getting married and having a, quote, normal life. And it's not that they don't want that as part of their lives. It's that the job is always the priority. And I think even for Tom, who's this person who kind of stumbles into this position, right, and the whole plot hinges on the idea that he's not exactly qualified to be a newsman, he does, in his own way, care a lot about what he's doing and dedicate himself to doing it well.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, Albert Brooks's character at the end is married with a child there,
right?
So, and then Tom is engaged. What I'm saying is I feel like the Aaron and the Jane characters could utilize the news as like, oh, of course I want a normal relationship, but my job, this is so important what we're doing. Whereas right. The Tom character is like, of course it's important, but so is being a good father and husband, you know? So
yeah.
I feel like he would, of all of them, he would strike that work-life balance the best until you get to that epilogue where it seems like Aaron has also struck that.
Right. Yeah, no, and I think you're right, because he's the one in the movie that we see really interested in, like, pursuing romance and, you know, sexual relationships and whatever as an important part of his life, I think, more so, even though, you know, Aaron is like pining away for Jane or whatever, but he kind of, you know, holds that back or whatever, and his job is more important to him. Whereas Tom is always very open about pursuing, whether it's Jane or the other colleague that he sleeps with and briefly dates or whatever. So I think you're right about that.
Hey, Josh, you ever sleep with a colleague?
I did not ever. No. But I feel like you might have something you want to let us know about that.
Let's move on.
You brought it up.
Let's move on.
So. Okay, fair enough.
Let's not ask Dave because he works for his dad.
Moving on.
Yeah, geez. Okay. In the New York Times, Vincent Canby said, "As exposés go, broadcast news is gentle. It's far more amused than angry. Its wit is decently humane. It also says something about the pervasive nature of television that, although the subject is parochial, broadcast news is no more or less arcane than Miami Vice. Mr. Brooks's screenplay overstates matters both at the beginning of the film and at the end. With a prologue that strains to be cute and an epilogue that is just unnecessary. In between, however, the movie is a sarcastic and carefully detailed picture of a world Mr. Brooks finds fascinating and also a little scary."
Yeah, I mean, we're all in agreement, I think, that the epilogue is totally unnecessary. And actually, the stronger ending would have been before that epilogue, where Holly Hunter's character turns down the Tom character and drives back in the cab where, you know, she gives directions and she's alone. And that's, you know, the choice she made. And I think that's the strongest ending. And that was a good ending. And then they tacked on that epilogue. The prologue's fine. I don't know why we have to take it out on the prologue there at the beginning. And as for the rest of it, I mean, I think the strength is this whole idea of they're orbiting around the news. I was amazed at how many character development conversations they could have that are all news-based. He really dug in deep to the subject matter.
Right. And he has, as I think the next review mentions, a background himself, having worked in TV news, James Brooks. So it's not surprising that he brings that level of authenticity to it. And yes, I agree that epilogue really is not only unnecessary, but it just seems like it's kind of like Brooks doesn't trust the audience to feel comfortable with where these characters have ended up, and he has to assure you how things are going to go and it's going to be okay for these people or whatever. But I kind of agree on the prologue too. I think it's a little cutesy showing the three of them as kids and, you know, kind of labeling each one as future anchor, future producer, future reporter. And the idea that like this brief personality trait that we see of them as a child is like defines how their professional life is going to go. And it kind of is reductive in a way that's unnecessary because they're more complex characters as we see them as adults, the way they're played by these actors. So I could have done without both of those.
Yeah, I'm okay with that, Josh.
Thank you. So finally, Hal Hinson in the Washington Post said, "The movie never comes close to being a great, penetrating work about television news. It's not a scathing satire like Network. Nor is it to broadcast journalism what All the President's Men was to print. But Brooks's ambitions appear to have been far less exalted. Brooks, who used to work for CBS News before moving on to such breakthrough shows as Mary Tyler Moore and Taxi, has crafted a teasing, affectionately critical satire of his former profession. In the process, he's created a spunky romantic comedy with some of the snappiest lines heard on screen in a long while."
Yeah, so I thought of Network while I was watching this movie, and it's, in a way, it's an unfair comparison. It's an obvious comparison because it's both TV news, but like Network, the whole point of Network is to talk about like the crumbling of the news industry and the, you know, the kind of birth of celebrity culture over news, right? And this is a romantic comedy set in the world of news, and they make some points about the news, but this is a romantic comedy first and a commentary on news and current events second, whereas Network is all about the current events and, you know, how the news cycle works towards that.
Right. And I mean, it's been a while since I saw Network, but I remember it being very dark and almost like dystopian or even like sci-fi-ish. And it, to me, yeah, it seems like much more of a sharp social commentary than is not only is being made here, but is even attempting to be made. Like you said, this is a romantic comedy first.
Right. I feel like that's an unfair critique on it. Like, oh, this doesn't have the incisiveness of Network. That's not what he was going for. And, you know, Brooks is such a legend in the world of comedy, TV comedy, especially like if he wanted to go for something that was more of a takedown, I think he could have done that. But that's not what this project is.
Right. I do think, though, that like some of the things that like the cutesy prologue, for example, when it feels a little sitcom-y, that's when he could have, you know, dialed that back a bit. And not that it needs to be a Network style dark satire, but some of it is maybe a little too cute at times. And it is serious. I mean, even if it's serious about romance or about these people's personalities, I think, you know, when it gets too goofy, it maybe is a little much. But overall, I think the tone is pretty well balanced.
And this is I think we all like this movie. Network is an all-timer. I highly recommend watching Network again for the first time.
Like I said, it's been a while. And it was interesting, like Hal Hinson obviously is comparing it unfavorably and saying Network is better. But in the Siskel and Ebert segment, I think it was Siskel who says, oh, this is so much better than Network. And I don't know, maybe he didn't like Network or something like that, but it was surprising to see that level of enthusiasm.
Well, we just talked about it a little bit on our Sidney Lumet episode from 75 on the Dog Day Afternoon one. And I mean, I think he did those two back to back. I love Network. It's a 5-star movie. Network's a better movie to me, but hey, different strokes for different folks.
Yeah, I mean, I believe you that it's better. I imagine I might feel the same way if I watched it again. So, but they really are two different kind of goals going on here.
Yeah. So Josh, a quick aside here, I'm acting in this Christmas show and they let one of the actors rewrite his monologue. And he put in the whole, "I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore" from Network. And it's like, it's interesting that, you know, what's that, 45 years later, I'd say? That's Matt. Nope, 47 years later. Yeah. So almost 50 years later, people are still quoting that.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the most famous lines in cinema history and is one of those lines that people are familiar with, probably even if they've never seen that movie or even heard of that movie, right?
You know? Right. And, you know, that the theater that I'm doing it is for the hipster and the indie kids, and they love references to the 1970s in their movies. kids.
I bet that's true, actually.
The kids.
So, yeah.
The kids, Josh.
Anyway, Jason, had you seen, obviously you've seen Network. Had you seen Broadcast News before?
Yes, I had seen Broadcast News. It was, again, we talk about those movies you keep hearing about and you got to check off the list. And I like everyone involved in it. So I had seen it. I liked it the first time. I like it this time.
Yeah, I also saw it as some years ago as a movie that was, you know, a major film that I've wanted to see. And at least looking at my like Letterboxd rating, I guess I was sort of lukewarm on it the first time. I think I liked it a little more this time. It's a good film. So, and I agree with you. I like all the people involved, and or at least all the stars involved, and they all do great work here. So
they really do. I mean, those three just really good together, and you know, whatever iteration you put them in.
Yeah, I mean, the chemistry amongst them all, and especially because Holly Hunter was a last-minute replacement, what, like 2 days before they started
amazing,
shooting?
Yeah, amazing, right?
Yeah, and it works out so well there. So, Dave, had you seen this one before?
I had not seen it, and I liked it too. It had always been on my list, and I'm glad to finally get to it.
Yeah, yeah. It's. I mean, I feel it is still, you know, even though it didn't win Best Picture or whatever, unlike that John Borman movie that I can't even remember even when Jason tells me about it, apparently, this is still a fairly well-regarded film that holds up and people watch.
I think so. And it's interesting because when you watch this or Network or something and you see the advances in technology and the ways the news cycle works, it's like certain points become totally moot. And then certain points like thematically are still as relevant as they were when they were making the movie.
Yeah, yeah, or even more so, or the way that they've evolved since then. So anything else you want to mention on the background of this film, Jason?
Yeah, Josh, so you mentioned that Holly Hunter came in 2 days before the shooting of this film, which is pretty amazing that she just kind of rocked it just like that. That was it Joe Beth Williams who was going to play the
It was
the
Deborah Winger, I believe, right. Yeah, who was the star of Terms of Endearment.
Yeah. So then she was pregnant and couldn't take the role. So I think that was cool. The basis for Holly Hunter's character is a woman, Susan Zerinsky, who was a famed news producer, I believe.
Yeah. And that's other, like, again, about Holly Hunter. It is amazing that she came in like that. And we think of her as this huge star now, but she hadn't really done a whole lot. Like, in again, in that Siskel and Ebert segment, they're saying, oh, and this newcomer, Holly Hunter, we really ought to pay attention to her now. So it was such a huge breakout role for her.
Well, and not just that, this and Raising Arizona, same year.
Right. And that was really the only like major role that she'd had up to this point. And that's kind of a, you know, is a different, very different kind of movie, certainly.
No love for, what is the film, Miss Firecracker?
I don't even know what that is.
I think it's like a 1984 movie that she made.
Yeah. So no, this was definitely like the first exposure that a lot of audiences had to her.
She won the Silver Bear in Berlin for Best Actress. Berlin Film.
And deservedly so.
Agreed.
So we'll come back and talk more of our general thoughts on Broadcast News.
Dave, can you play us back in with like a news break?
Breaking news here from Las Vegas. Legendary podcast, Awesome Movie Year has returned.
We go now live to Josh Bell out in the field. And by the field, I mean his desk. Josh, what do you have for us here on the broadcast news episode of Awesome Movie Year?
Well, Jason, all right, we can stop that. I didn't even mean to do it. This is a good movie. Yeah, I will say, I mean, as you were talking about earlier, I do personally have like a long history with TV news. I've never worked directly in TV news, but both my parents worked in TV news. My mom was no longer working in TV news by the time I was a small child, but my dad has spent his whole career working in that industry. So I was like going to newsrooms and stuff like that since I was a little kid and meeting news producers, writers, anchors, etc. So it was an environment that I was always kind of familiar with. And these days I do movie reviews on TV news. And since the pandemic, I record these at my house and just kind of send them in. But for many, many years, I would go into the TV news studio, and I know a lot of TV news people. So I feel like I have had some experience with this environment, but at the same time, again, I've never been in the actual position that any of these characters are in.
But I think, and I'll leave it to you, it probably feels pretty authentic to what you knew.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and I think even, you know, you're talking about like the way that things have changed, and of course, technology is very different, but, you know, those big editing bays with the, I think they're Betamax tapes that they use, or the, maybe there's some other format. They're like these oversized videotapes that they use. And I remember seeing all that kind of stuff, and the rushing to get the clip on the air and all of that definitely feels familiar. And as we said, James L. Brooks had his own experience actually working in TV news. And Susan Zirinsky, that producer who's the basis for Holly Hunter's character, I believe was a consultant on this film. So seemingly there's a lot of authenticity here.
That sequence is so exciting. They did such a good job of like, oh, we're not going to make it to air on time. We're going to have to call New York. And, you know, while they're editing the tape to get like one image in or one soundbite in, and they get it in just in time. And you have the Joan Cusack character running down the hall to make it. And it feels like that sequence has been ripped off by, like, I remember those O.J. Simpson, like, Avis commercials while he's running through the airport and everything, you know, and all the obstacles he has to dodge. But, you know, we've talked about Joan Cusack a lot on this show, and even in a smaller role, like, she maximizes her minutes.
Yeah, she's great. I mean, and she's great at that goofy comedy, too, but she also has a kind of character arc as this background character, and when there's the big layoffs toward the end of the film, and she's the one who get one of the ones who gets laid off, and she really has that, brings that emotion to it, and you care about that person, even though we don't really know that much about her because she's kind of a background character.
Right. So Jane is this like uber news producer, like next superstar in line, and she proves it throughout the movie, and you know that she deserves all the big jobs. Aaron is the like the great reporter who's probably going to win a lot of awards for his field work. But when he gets the chance to anchor the news, he is not cut out for that. And that was a good reveal in that. So what happens in the script, it just says he does the news and something goes wrong. And Albert Brooks was watching CNN and he saw like an anchor that he had never, as he said, he had never seen him before or since, but he started sweating a lot on air, and he called James L. Brooks and said, this is what we got to do with my character. But I think the great thing about that was how it turned out. Like, his dream gets decimated and he doesn't say like, oh, boo-hoo, I'll never accomplish it. He looks at it as a very freeing thing. Like, hey, my space is here. This is what I should be doing in the field where I'm strongest. Right. And Tom is this good looking, charismatic guy who's groomed to be the anchor of the future. And as you said, does care, but maybe is not as qualified as the others. So you have these three characters and this kind of dalliance where Jane is attracted to Tom, but doesn't want to be. Tom is attracted to Jane because he's a good old fashioned red blooded American man. And Aaron is attracted to Jane because he's in love with her, but can't get up the gumption to actually tell her. And so you have this love triangle, but I think they execute it really well. Because, like, for instance, I thought the Tom and Aaron thing, like people would say, oh, they're rivals or, you know, this or that. But they're not. They're like, you know, they see both good and bad in each other, but there is a professional and personal, like, respect between them.
Right. And I think it's interesting because clearly Tom never views Aaron as a rival, either professionally or personally. He never seems to feel threatened about the time that Aaron spends with Jane, even when Tom is trying to pursue her romantically. And he never feels threatened by him professionally, to the point where, you know, we have the scene where Aaron is going to get his big chance to do the anchoring, which ends up going poorly. And Tom says, you know, let me give you some pointers or whatever. And I feel like in a broader comedy, Tom would be like sabotaging him some way and giving him bad pointers or whatever. But he genuinely gives him suggestions that are helpful and that come from his perspective and the things that he knows and is good at, which is connecting with the audience and looking good on camera. And I feel like the movie maybe is slightly dismissive of those things, but he's 100% right about that importance, that in TV news, you're not going to be able to inform people if they're not interested in listening to you. And that's important to be able to connect that way. So I liked that he was genuinely giving good suggestions, you know, telling him how to position himself and, you know, to sit on his jacket or whatever so that it's not rumpled. And I have to admit that this week when I was recording my movie review segment for TV, I wasn't wearing a jacket, but I sat on my shirt there. It looked better.
Nice. Awesome. Did you put shoulder pads in?
I did not. I feel like that's not the fashion of the moment.
Everything you just iterated about how Tom treated Aaron also treated Tom the same way. Tom wanted tips from Aaron on his story, and Aaron gave it to him. And there is that kind of professional respect level where, like, oh, is this the best guy? Maybe not, but I'm still going to, you know, help put together the best program, which we see when Tom gets like the big breaking piece that Jane produces about military over expenditure. And Aaron thought it should have been his piece, but he still calls in to offer some insight to help the story along.
Right. I think in that professional context, he's able to do that. But I think the difference there is that we see his huge resentment that even though he does call in and give them this valuable information and help them make the best report that they can, he's super bitter about it, right? And he definitely looks down on Tom, and certainly on a personal level. Whereas I feel like you never got that sense from Tom. He's not reluctantly helping Aaron, giving him these pointers for being an anchor.
Well, why would he? He's the good-looking main anchor being groomed for the big show who gets every woman he wants, right?
Well, right. But at the same time, I mean, he seems like one of the interesting things about his character is that he's very aware of his own shortcomings, where he's not knowledgeable about world affairs or whatever, and that there is value, you know, that Aaron is good at what Aaron can do, and it could theoretically be a threat. And maybe if Aaron is not good at being an anchor and Tom helps him be better at it, then he could be a genuine threat to Tom, but Tom never seems to take that into account. So, I mean, to me, watching this movie, and I don't know what you're meant to think really, but I was always on Tom's side and never on Aaron's side as I was watching this film.
It's interesting, Josh, because I think you're more of an intellectual type, you know?
Well, right. But I think it's less about whether he's intellectual and more that he's just kind of this entitled dickhead.
The thing where you're saying that the weakness of Tom, right, is that maybe he's not as knowledgeable. The fact that Tom recognizes that, like, becomes a strength, because not only can he work on that, but he can accentuate the things that he knows he does well, right? So in a way, it works out better for him because of that. Whereas Aaron, you know, he has to go through and attempt these different things to learn the hard way what his weaknesses are, which can't be improved upon or won't be improved upon.
Right. And I think that, you know, means Tom has a level of self-awareness that Aaron does not have. And
agreed.
I mean, I think there's a description, you know, often it seems like people talk about Tom like, oh, he's this like himbo or something like that. But he's not. He has a level of emotional intelligence that Aaron doesn't have. And again, I feel like just the knowledge of what you don't know and being able to understand what it is that you should know and that you don't or can't, I think that's a huge deal there. And I mean, I think, again, in a lesser movie, we might see Tom start out that way and then get too full of himself and drunk with power and stop caring about what he doesn't know. But one thing that I did like in the epilogue is that we see Tom all those years later, and he's obviously, you know, been very successful. And now he's been promoted to the main anchor after Jack Nicholson's character has retired. And even at that point where he's presumably being paid millions of dollars to be the face of this network, he said, I declined to also be the managing editor, which is sort of the traditional thing where that main anchor is also like the head of the whole news process. Because even at that point, he acknowledges like, I'm not the person to do this. And he asks Holly Hunter to do it.
Yeah. Now, I don't have the news experience that you do, Josh, but I was a showrunner for a TV show that went live every weekend. And that, there is so much excitement about when you're in that process about being live, because, you know, you do all this preparation and hopefully you execute, but there's no net, right? Like whatever goes on. And there are times that you can't control things, you know, so you have to adapt on the fly. Which we see Tom do really, really well in that kind of piece that he's given to Anchor, where the Holly Hunter character is kind of in his ear with information and he's expressing it his own way. I mean, it's just a good exploration of the different characters' strengths on air, but also how those character traits work in their personal lives as well.
Right. And that is that sequence, which is a great sequence, and Brooks shoots it almost there's shots of Holly Hunter like kind of pressing buttons to go back and forth to things or whatever that are very sensual. And of course afterwards Tom comes up to her and it's like, oh my God, that was like great sex or whatever. But yeah, I mean, it is really impressive what Tom does, because it's not only that she tells him something and then he is able to express it, but he has to like listen to what she's telling him, process it, and find a way to express it all while he's talking about other things at the same time. I mean, that's a really difficult balancing act, I feel like.
Yeah. So Josh, there's this shot, they're at the boss's like party, right? And we know Aaron has a thing for Jane and Jane has a thing for Tom. And Tom is he or isn't he going to sleep with Jennifer, who has told Jane that she also has a thing for Tom. And there's a shot where we see Aaron watching Jane, who is watching Tom speak to Jennifer. And it's so good the way he's able to encapsulate all of that in one shot.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem to me a little odd that this is like an Oscar nominee for best cinematography, but there are some very well-constructed shots in it. I think it's not the kind of movie that you think of as visually spectacular or anything compared to like, you know, The Last Emperor that we talked about, which was the best picture winner, and I believe also the cinematography winner. But there's definitely some well-constructed. It doesn't look like a sitcom, you know, given Brooks's background and that kind of stuff.
Did you have any, you know, you had mentioned one of the reviews talked about all those like quippy lines, like, I'll meet you at the place where the thing happened, you know, where we went, you know, and she's like, Right. Okay. And, you know, he's got, Tom says to Albert Brooks, he goes, except for social, you're my role model, which is a great line. Did you have any favorite lines?
And I think, wasn't that actually Jane? It's the Jennifer says that to Jane.
Oh, no, right.
Joan Cusack says it to Jane.
You're right. That's right. And it's
but
good.
You it would apply to Aaron as well, because of course they're both socially awkward. So, I mean, I don't know about funny lines, but there is that great line when the boss is the head of the news division or whatever is like complaining to Jane about her persistence, and he says something like, you know, it must be great to always know that you're the smartest person in the room and you know better than everyone else or whatever. And she's like, no, it's terrible. And
it's exhausting.
Really, because, you know, that's, I think what it gets at too, is for both her and for Aaron, Albert Brooks's character, is that intellectualism and that passion or whatever, the being neurotic like that is, it leads to all sorts of anxiety or whatever. I mean, one of Jane's other character traits is that she just like sobs randomly, right?
It's so good, those moments where she just breaks down, which can be anywhere. And it's like, this is 1987, right? And it's like, I hope you're taking care of your mental health, Jane. We need to get you a good therapist.
Yeah, Jane and Aaron both, and probably Tom. These people should all be in therapy, I think.
Yeah, there's nothing. I mean, hey, man, we've all been in therapy. I don't know about Dave, but you and I have. So,
yeah Dave's podcasts are his therapy.
There you go.
That's good. There was that one other line where they do the layoffs at the end, and the boss talks to one employee who's been there for a long time, and they're having like a very nice conversation, and the boss is like, "Well, look, if you need anything else, just let me know." And the guy just throws it away and he goes, I certainly hope you'll die soon, you know. It's a great line.
That is that person who I don't know if we've even seen him speak before, but just the brutality of all those layoffs. And yeah, that is a great moment. And there's a great moment there too with, I mean, Jack Nicholson is barely in this film. He plays the big famous anchor, and we see him almost exclusively just on like TV monitors as they're throwing to him or whatever, but he does show up there in that scene with all the layoffs, and he seems like he's kind of trying to be this generous guy. He's like, oh, I wanted to be here. This is so terrible. I want to, you know, show solidarity with these people. And the boss makes some offhand remark about like, well, you know, if you could take $1 million off your salary, we could, you know, maybe not have as many layoffs. And he just immediately is like groveling, like, oh, I didn't mean to say that. I was just a joke. I was just such a terrible joke. And Jack Nicholson doesn't have to say anything, but you just get the sense right there of how actually like probably really arrogant and inconsiderate this guy is.
And Nicholson refused pay to do this movie. He did win a supporting actor for Terms of Endearment. So, you know, another one of these like Albert Brooks and Nicholson, they all work repeatedly with James L. Brooks here.
Yeah, I mean, they obviously have good relationships. So Nicholson in that way, the opposite of his character.
I mean, look, I'm not going to defend like that behavior, but I do understand like, I mean, he's the face of a network and the face of network news at its most powerful. So I could understand the need to have an ego for something like that.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, in a way, it's more indicative because he's not really a character that has dimensions or whatever in this film. It's more indicative of the character of the boss that he would just immediately
kowtow.
Right. And panic like, oh, my God, how could I have said that? I need to salvage this situation immediately and just grovel as much as possible.
How, Josh, we watched this movie together and I kept bringing up there is so much red. The color red is everywhere with Holly Hunter. And I couldn't figure out the symbolism.
Yeah, I don't know. And I mean, I feel like sometimes it's less symbolic and it's just they decide that this is sort of a motif that we're going to use to kind of highlight this character. And that may be the reason. But other than that, I don't know. I mean, it's a color that's kind of, it's bold and it's noticeable. And maybe that's kind of the idea. And maybe we would expect that, especially in this, you know, like in TV news, people are dressing in all sorts of like beiges and grays or whatever. And she, in the meantime, is highlighted in red. But I don't really know exactly beyond that how I would characterize it.
Yeah. So Josh, we talked about how Holly Hunter took this role 2 days before filming after Deborah Winger dropped out. What do you think of these? I mean, these are all good actresses, but who would you have picked beyond Holly Hunter? The other names in consideration, Sigourney Weaver, Diane Wiest, Jessica Lange, Elizabeth Perkins, Catherine O'Hara, or Mary Beth Hurt?
I mean, that's a great, great list. So I don't even know. Sigourney Weaver, maybe? I mean, any of those people, I think, could have done a really good job of it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the three that jumped out to me were Sigourney Weaver, Jessica Lange, and I think Catherine O'Hara would have been a real interesting choice here.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I'm sure she's done more dramatic parts, but, you know, we associate her with kind of broad comedy, but I think she could have done something interesting with it. And you know, just like Holly Hunter got this showcase where people only knew her for broad comedy because they'd seen Raising Arizona, you know, it could have been the same. For Catherine O'Hara.
Yeah, no love for Miss Firecracker. That is the name of the movie.
You've never seen or heard of until you just read it on Wikipedia.
I knew about it. It's a... Oh, and it actually came out after this movie, so never mind.
All right. Thanks for your insights.
Yeah, so I nailed it again. So.
Yes, indeed, you did.
Yeah. Using Blood Simple, uncredited. No, nothing, really. Nothing here. Swing Ship? Nope, nothing. Sorry, buddy. I got nothing. Right.
I mean, and this is, even if she had like brief roles in other things, I mean, she's really the lead of this film.
Yeah. And you look at like, you know, she had a broadcast news in Raising Arizona in 87. And then in 93, she has The Piano and The Firm. Like, she has these huge years sometimes.
Right. I mean, and she's had an amazing career, which we'll talk about. But should we rate this movie first?
Sure. Out of five bloated military projects that go over expenditures and don't work?
Yeah, okay, sure, why not? We can do that as one of the news topics that they address here. So I give it 3.5 out of 5. I think it's a good movie, and I mean there are some flaws that we've talked about and the critics talk about, but overall this is just very entertaining, well acted movie that you know, it's easy to watch. So 3.5 out of 5 for me.
This just in, I also give it 3.5 out of 5.
Dave, how would you rate this?
I'm also going 3.5. All right. I'm not going to do the music, though, even though I am the music guy.
That's okay.
You could be in the newsroom, Dave, like offering a new jingle to the exec producers.
I know. While they just, yeah, I was going to say, rapping. That's the one thing you guys didn't really bring up is those two guys they bring in to do the news theme. I mean, we talked about music, but I mean, you know.
Right. That's just like, awesome. Like a fun, goofy aside moment. And those are played by actual composers who just kind of did this cameo. And, you know, they definitely have that like quirky 1980s musician look to them as their.
Yeah, they killed it.
Yeah.
Mark Scheinman and Glenn Robin.
Right. But who were not the composers of the music for like the score for this film, but just kind of came in and did that for fun, I guess. So
yeah,
and it's a cool little moment.
That is fun. Yeah.
So we'll come back and talk about the legacy of broadcast news. Welcome back to Awesome Movie Year. In this special bonus episode of our season on the films of 1987, we are talking about James L. Brooks's Broadcast News. And Brooks, I mean, as we said, he actually started himself in TV news and is still really, I think, primarily known as this major TV producer. You know, all these shows that he had worked on before this, and he kind of then made this transition in the 80s to being a filmmaker, starting with Terms of Endearment and then with this. But he's not at all a prolific filmmaker, even though, I mean, he won all those Oscars for Terms of Endearment, and then this was nominated for a bunch of Oscars. And the other film that he's made that was also a massive awards and critical sensation, As Good As It Gets, with Jack Nicholson as well. In between these two, though, he made I'll Do Anything, which is one of the most famous disasters, I feel like, in Hollywood history in 1994 with Nick Nolte and Albert Brooks again, and a movie that was a musical. And the test screenings were so disastrous that they then took out all the musical numbers and then somehow released the movie that way.
That sounds weird. I'd like to see it with the musical numbers. That, if I'm not mistaken, that's Julia Roberts and Nick Nolte is.
No, I think you're mistaken, because I was mistaken and mentioned that to you. And I was confusing it with another movie from 1994 starring Nick Nolte that was a giant failure, which is I Love Trouble, which co-stars Julia Roberts. But no, I'll Do Anything stars Nick Nolte and Albert Brooks. And I think it's Nick Nolte and like bonding with his kid or something like that.
Now I feel like Nick Nolte. This confused here.
What about Nick Nolte singing, right?
I can't do it.
Can you imagine why the test audiences might not have been into that?
I'd be into that. I want to hear it. So yeah. Going back to, right. He's basically three out of six, like three major hits and three movies that we don't think about. Right. So I'll Do Anything, Spanglish, and How Do You Know, which I know has been reassessed more lately. But he's also been the producer on everything from Jerry Maguire and The Edge of 17 to this year's Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. And then, of course, he championed Bottle Rocket. And I think, John Cusack has a off-screen cameo in this movie, and he was the exec producer of Say Anything. So
yeah, I mean, and his probably his biggest career achievement is as a co-creator and executive producer of The Simpsons, which he's been doing for, you know, the last 30 years or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, but like, it's like, you could say that, I could say, is it that, is it Taxi, is it Mary Tyler Moore? He has 54 Emmy nominations. He won the best comedy series in 76, 77, 79, 80, and 81, right? Like, he's got tons of Emmys. He's got 8 Oscar noms and 3 wins. Like, he, as the Chicago Sun-Times said, Josh, his career is a nonstop crescendo.
Yeah. And he is finally returning to film. How Do You Know, which was the last movie he made, it was in 2010. And just recently, they announced a bunch of casting for his new film that he's working on called Ella McKay. That's going to have Emma Mackey, Jamie Lee Curtis, Woody Harrelson, and Ayo Edebiri. So quite an impressive cast, and it's a kind of political dramedy. So we'll see if he can recapture. I haven't seen How Do You Know, and as you say, it does have sort of a critical reassessment. I will say Spanglish is just unbelievably terrible. I like loathed that movie. So I'll be curious to see what he comes up
with. Ella McKay, an idealistic young politician who juggles familial issues and has a challenging work life, is preparing to take over the job of her mentor, the state's longtime incumbent senator. One actor you didn't mention who's going to be in that, Albert Brooks.
Hey, well, I look forward to that film. It sounds like an interesting concept. We'll see how it goes.
I think in my to watch list coming up is the Albert Brooks documentary made by Awesome Movie Year's own Rob Reiner, Defending My Life. And I'm excited to watch that. And I've been revisiting some Albert Brooks movies along the way.
Yeah, I mean, Albert Brooks, of course, is a comedy legend as a stand-up, as a creator of like short films for Saturday Night Live, and as a writer director. I think you've seen more than I have. I don't know if you have a favorite movie from him as a filmmaker.
Yeah, so I mean, I got to rewatch Defending Your Life. I think that's most people's favorite, and I would probably be mine, but I haven't seen it in so long. I think Real Life is so cool. Everyone should go watch that. It's from the 70s, and it basically is a fake reality show, which was based on, you know, the PBS show about that family that they did in the 70s, but it's quite good. And of course, we all love him in Drive. He's so good in Drive.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't directed a film since 2005 with Looking for Comedy in the Muslim World, which I haven't seen, but was kind of a failure. And it's weird to me because he is such a beloved institution at this point. I mean, that has gotten a lot of press recently because of that Rob Reiner documentary that it just came out within the last couple of weeks as we're recording this. But for whatever reason, I don't know if he's not pursuing it, or maybe he still can't get anything off the ground, but he's not writing or directing any films. But he shows up as an actor. Drive is one, of course, that's notable because it's this dark, menacing role of his. But I'm sure we talked about him in our Finding Nemo episode. I mean, he's always a welcome presence as an actor, even if he's not going to make another film as a director.
Right. I feel like he is kind of like he picks and chooses what he wants to do. And he's probably done that throughout his entire career. But there are all these stories. I'm guessing there might be some in that documentary about he would basically be on like a different, you know, variety show every week, whether it was like Carson or Merv Griffin or, you know, Dinah Shore. And like they would book him and then he would come up with a bit for like that show. And that's pretty amazing that he was that prolific in the ability to craft television worthy bits without trying them out.
Right. I mean, and I feel like that's kind of a lost art, and we don't have, I mean, we still have talk shows, but we don't have that kind of variety and like game show and whatever circuit in that same way now that they did back in like the 70s and 80s.
It's a different time, Josh. William Hurt won an Oscar for Kiss of the Spider Woman. You ever see that?
I did. I don't remember a whole lot about it, but I have seen it.
So he did Kiss of the Spider Woman, Children of a Lesser God, and Broadcast News all in a row, getting three Oscar nominations. Pretty cool. I mean, The Big Chill, AI, The Village, you know, he had a storied career, died in 2022, Seth.
Yeah, and the last roles he played were all in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
I know, but one thing I like about older William Hurt is everything seems so efforted. It's hard to get anything across without really feeling it.
That's a really good William Hurt impression.
I've never done a William Hurt impression, if I'm going to be honest with you.
So I'm that was quite that, impressed. I feel like that's not the impression that I would have imagined to show up here. And it really is very accurate.
Ah, that's nice. Hey, what a win for me today.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Holly Hunter, as we've said, you know, huge star, tons of awards. She won that Oscar for The Piano. We probably talked about her when we did our episode on David Cronenberg's Crash.
Yeah.
I mean, people think of her as the voice of the mom from The Incredibles. She's done a ton of TV stuff. And she's really good at like serious, heavy stuff. I mean, like just TV-wise, she was on the first season of Top of the Lake, which is this very intense drama show. And fairly recently was on the Tina Fey sitcom Mr. Mayor, which as a on the whole is not great. But she plays this like super goofy role and she just totally dives into the sitcom silliness of it. And she's just as good at that.
She is good at that. She's also had a nice recurring role in Succession. I think we both like Top of the Lake and would recommend that. She has two Emmys for Outstanding Lead Actress in a Limited Series or Movie for Roe vs. Wade and The Positively True Adventures of the Alleged Texas Cheerleader Murdering Mom, which sounds like a perfect podcast for nowadays. Josh, her next movie is called Hurricana. In an attempt to save Anna Nicole Smith's life, her devoted therapist embarks on a 36-hour odyssey in which she unknowingly delivers the fatal blow.
Is she playing Anna Nicole Smith's therapist?
I think so, but I don't know.
Sounds interesting.
It could be interesting.
Strange concept.
Hey, Josh, I wanted to shout out Robert Prosky, who you know I'm a fan of, as Ernie. He's just kind of there as like a veteran newsroom guy, but he makes the most, he was a great character actor, and he makes the most of everything he's in. I love him as the crime boss and thief.
Yeah, he's a great character actor. And as I think when we were watching it together, we were speculating as to whether he was ever young.
There's a lot of good character actors in here. Christian Clemenson, who played Hans on Boston Legal.
Yes. Yeah, I love that. And there's, you know what? There's like going back to Tom's emotional intelligence. There's a great moment in here with Christian Clemenson's character. He plays the editor. And that in that great scene where that's like down to the wire or whatever, and you're all on Holly Hunter's side, right? Because she's trying to make it the best segment it can possibly be, even if it means they finish it at the last possible second or whatever. And she's making all these demands of this editor. And then when Tom does his own piece that he wants to prove himself to be able to do a piece on his own, and he's editing it with Christian Clemenson's character, and they're going through it, and he asks him, and he's like, well, what do you think? Do you think it's good? And the guy is like, no one has ever asked me that. And it just shows, you know, he's got that appreciation for someone who does really important work that, you know, I think other people in, you know, the other characters don't necessarily acknowledge. So, you know, Team Tom here.
Yeah, you're all Team Tom. We got it, Josh. You're Team Tom all the way. Were you Team Edward or Team Jacob in the Twilight movies?
No, I was Team. I didn't like that I had to see those movies.
That's
it was
fair.
A false dichotomy because there was no way in the movie that she was ever going to end up with Jacob, and they never even pretended that she would. So I this is not relevant at all. But
everything's relevant, Josh. I thought Lois Childs, who played Jennifer, was good. You could see her in Moonraker and Creepshow 2. So just the you know, great actors all the way through. Holly Hunter and William Hurt appeared in Bonnie and Clyde in 2013 together, and John and Joan Cusack. This is one of the 10 movies they have both starred in or acted in together.
I mean, I didn't even notice John Cusack because he's in like the background or something at one point. I think that's about it.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree, Josh.
So that is broadcast news. And that's this episode of Awesome Movie Year. If you're not on our Patreon, check that out. That By David Rosen Patreon, where you get bonus episodes from us and music from our wonderful producer, David Rosen, and bonus episodes of Piecing It Together. So if you're listening to this later, go back, and there's probably some other bonus episode there now that you can listen to. And in the meantime, check us out on all the other things online and on social media.
We're still at awesomemovieyear.com, Awesome Movie Year on Facebook and Instagram, Awesome Movie Pod on Fuck Off. And let's see, I'm Jason Harris Comedy or J. Harris Comedy on all the things. Eat this comedy, that's still a thing. Hey, I got some new followers on Letterboxd because I did Dave's live podcast appearance. I will follow you back because I want to know what you're watching and what you're liking. Go for Jason. Also, Josh, I'll tell him, tag Awesome Movie Year if you watch one of the movies that we've covered on Letterboxd so we know. And it helps us, and we'll discuss it with you.
Yeah. So you can find some old things from me at joshbellhateseverything.com. I am at Josh Bell Hates Everything on Facebook and at Signal Bleed on the service shall not be named, X, Twitter, whatever.
On your right wing propaganda machine.
Yeah, I'm still there. Also at Signal Bleed on Blue Sky and on Letterboxd, and definitely tag Awesome Movie Year with your reviews. I've done it. No one else has done it, but I'm doing it. And you can also listen to our producer, David Rosen's awesome podcast, Piecing It Together.
Yeah, I've been tagging my reviews too. So,
oh, thank you, Dave. I hadn't noticed, yes. But I appreciate it.
There you go. Yeah, check out Piecing It Together wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. And yeah, I've got a lot of stuff hitting the Patreon over the next couple of months from my music. So definitely, if you're hearing this on the Patreon, thank you so much. And lots of more content on the way.
So yeah, I mean, we always have bonus episodes up on Patreon. And if you are listening to this there, you can check out our upcoming season on the films of 1939. And thank you for listening to Awesome Movie Year.
Thank you for listening to Awesome Movie Year. Make sure to follow Awesome Movie Year on Facebook, at Awesome Movie Pod on Twitter, and at Awesome Movie Year on Instagram. And if you like the show, review us and rate us with 5 stars on Apple Podcasts.
An All Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.
This has been awesome movie year.